This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Happy Wednesday afternoon, and welcome to another edition of the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you along for the ride for the next hour. And as always, you're listening to the show live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you are tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show. And of course, you're doing that on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, this is going to be a fun hour. I know it is. And even though I'm speaking to this person on radio for the first time, we've had a couple of brief phone conversations, and her energy and her passion for the sport is palpable, and it doesn't take long to pick up on it. I think you'll agree once we get into the interview. Today's guest has saddled 163 horses to date. 47 of those have found themselves standing in the winner's circle. That's nearly 29%. For all of you who like to hang your hat on statistics. And to further put that number in perspective for you, that's a higher win rate than Todd Pletcher, Chad Brown, Bill Mott, Mark Cassie, and Bob Baffert. And that goes along with 80 wins in the saddle during a 7-year riding career. To say that this lady knows a thing or two about winning races would be a pretty big understatement. So please join me in welcoming former jockey, now trainer, the native of Woodsley, Ontario, Brittany Vandenberg, to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Brittany, welcome.
Hi, Mike. I thought you were talking about somebody else there when you're reading those stats. Oh, man.
I didn't set that bar too high, did I?
I know. I'm like, geez, should I just hang up now? And I think we're good.
Yeah, you can send me the check later if you want to hire me
exactly,
as your agent.
Right?
I'm happy to come on board and represent you with those kind of statistics and numbers. And look, I know we're not talking about graded stakes wins, at least
right.
not yet. But
right.
Brittany, to start your career and do it in that fashion, what a beginning. Well done.
Oh, thank you. I know, it's been crazy to say the least. It's happened so fast. We definitely didn't expect this, but like what you're saying, I haven't even had a chance to really go over the stats yet because we've just been kind of rolling things over one horse at a time, one win at a time. But when you put it into perspective like that, it's been an amazing couple of years, that's for sure.
Yeah, your first win as a trainer, and we're going to talk about your background and how you got started and your family history and growing up
sure.
in Ontario. We'll talk about all of those types of things, but your first win as a trainer came on June 9th of 2019. That was at Arlington Park with a horse
yep.
named Trap Valley, and I know that
yep.
that had to be an extremely special day for you.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah, that whole day really actually was just a blur. We loved that horse. We had been working with him for maybe a few weeks at the time, trying to get him fit and ready and seeing if he would like the poly and everything else. And I remember legging up Carlos Marquez. And as you probably know, Chris Amy's my fiance. And so he wasn't able to ride the horse at the time. So Carlos just said, I'm going to do my best Chris Amy impression. I said, okay, sounds good. And he says, I'm going to get you your first winner today. And I wasn't thinking anything of it, really. I think it was a lot higher class. I think we had claimed the horse for $8,000, and it was a race, I believe, for $35,000. And I was kind of thinking, man, we're out of our category here. And the horse went and ran a huge race and won. And I just remember just tearing up in the winner's circle. And I thought, I hope they don't get this on the win pitcher. I don't want to be crying in my first win pitcher. So, but yeah,
I'm sure you would.
Definitely.
I'm sure you wouldn't be the first trainer to be crying in your first win picture.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But, yeah, it was very special. As all your first wins are, I mean, my first win as a jockey was special. My first win as a trainer was special. And, I mean, not to take away from the wins after that, but always your first, you remember. So, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And to do it at Arlington, a place where you had had success as a rider, with those people that you knew so well, and to be there in that environment and do it at Arlington, had to take things to another level.
Oh, yeah. I know. The second that I stepped in Arlington, I mean, I was there for maybe a year previously riding, but the second I went to Arlington, I kind of knew that was a spot that I wanted to be at. It was just, I don't know if you've ever been there, Mike, but, oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's just a gorgeous place. It's got that old school feel to it, of like old horse racing feel, and it just kind of brings you back to like what horse racing's about, and I absolutely loved it there. So to get my first win there was very special for me, that's for sure.
It's a special place for me too. Our first broadcast, when I first started Horse Racing Radio Network back in 2005, our first broadcast outside the state of Kentucky was the Arlington Million that year. And I'll never forget, they were the first racetrack to say, yeah, come on up and broadcast our race. We were set up out back by the paddock looking at all the flags in the back of the grandstand.
Nice?
And the,
isn't that such a pretty
and the
area?
Flowers. Yeah, it's so beautiful at Arlington Park.
Yeah, really, really, really nice. I don't know if you had a chance. Did you have a chance to go up to the top room there and everything and kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just beautiful. Yeah, really, really, really nice. It's like I guess it's not really a hidden gem, but to most people in Chicago, I don't know how many people get out there, but it's really, it doesn't look like it belongs in Chicago. It looks like it belongs in Kentucky or something, the way that they set it up. It's just beautiful.
It's a shame that, you know, racing in Illinois is in such disarray right now, and there's a chance
right.
We might not see racing at Arlington anymore moving forward, and that would be... To lose Arlington Park would be as significant a loss to our sport as any track that we've ever lost.
Oh, yeah, that would be tragic. I mean, there's so many memories there. You walk down the halls, all the pictures and all the wins and all the greats that have walked through the halls there and been in the paddock there. And you, like I said, you just get this kind of electric feel when you're at Arlington. And you don't get that at too many racetracks, but you do get it there. And it would really be a shame if that place closed their doors. I know that they were getting a casino over at Hawthorne and the other track in Illinois at Fairmount Park, but I believe those are trying to improve Illinois horse racing. But I wish Arlington would jump on the bandwagon, because I think that they have the most beautiful facility and they bring out the best crowds. I mean, when you're coming into, your horse is coming down to the wire, it's like a roar, you know, from those giant grandstands, and it's something that you don't hear everywhere. So it would really be a shame if they did end up closing their doors, but we're keeping our fingers crossed. So.
You know, you didn't have to wait long to get that first win out of your way either. It was just your third career starter as a trainer.
Yeah.
Was there a part of you that said, hey, this isn't so hard?
Well, I had kind of been, I'm sure we'll get into it, but I had kind of been training horses my entire life. Since I've been a little kid, I've kind of been put to project horses. So this was not really out of the ordinary for me, but it was on a much bigger scale, because the racing world wasn't really something. I hadn't worked as an assistant trainer. I hadn't been, doing anything like that. I've just kind of been observing the way things that are run and the way trainers run things when I was a rider, because I'd always aspired to be a trainer. So... just from doing that and kind of picking up little things here and there, I kind of felt I had a decent grasp of it. But, man, I learn things every day. You're never short of learning, that's for sure, in this sport. I mean, every horse teaches you something different. But I had a little grasp of kind of where I wanted to go with this horse and stuff. So it was a shock that I won at that price, but at the same time, I had a little background in training before, I guess you could say. So not in racehorse training, but in other disciplines. So I kind of had, I knew my way around a little bit around, the horse per se, I guess you'd call it, instead of just riding. So,
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the beginning. By the way, visiting with Brittany Vandenberg here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. As I mentioned, born in Ontario, she has been around horses her whole life, and I'm going to let her tell you that story now. Where did it all begin for Brittany Vandenberg?
Okay, so like you said, it was Woodsley, Ontario. My dad and mom are farmers. So they run about 1,200 acres in Canada. They both weren't horse riders, though. They had asked me when I was a kid if I wanted a horse because we had a farm. I think I was 4 years old. And my mom got me my first pony. Her name was Mary. And I mean, this is how much my parents had no idea about horses. My mom was putting on the saddle and not putting on a girth to do up the saddle. So I would get on the pony and go jogging off or galloping off, and the saddle would just fall off. And my mom couldn't figure out what was going on. So, I mean, that's how green we were into horses. We kind of had no idea. So anyway, thank goodness she went and got me lessons. I'd had 3 or 4 riding lessons, and by then my mom had kind of grasped a little bit of the tack and what to put on them and everything. And so from there, we kind of started growing, and from there I got more ponies and more horses. And by the time I was, let's say, 7 or 8, I had stopped with the ponies and I had started with the horses. I said, no, I got to get into the horses. And I remember my mom was so scared, she would put me in hockey pads. Because in Canada, you know, it's all about hockey. So I would sure. be out there in hockey pads riding these horses at 8 years old with wooden blocks in my stirrups to try to get the stirrups up high enough to actually fit my legs. So it was something. But anyway, I think that helped me grow a lot, because I used to always take a horse on that was a challenge. Take a horse that was a challenge. I never wanted to stick with one horse. So I got into barrel racing, of course, because I love the speed. And people used to pay me at the horse shows when I was like 9 and 10 years old just to get on their problem horses. They're ones that would buck or do something ridiculous. And they used to say, this little girl will tune them up. So I kind of got a reputation of, I guess you could say, being a little crash test dummy. But it worked out in my favor, because it taught me a lot about horses in general, and it taught me a lot about getting my seat to me and figuring out, you know, sometimes the horses that are the hardest to break are the ones that make the best athletes. So I guess from there, I went on and you know, took on the barrel racing career and started with that all through high school, got a bunch of different barrel horses, and trained them from the beginning. I never bought a horse that was already trained. So I was always training them from the start. And we won the national finals in Canada, and with one of my horses that I trained. So that was one of my highlights, you know, as a barrel racer, was to win the national finals. And when I did it, I was excited, but at the same time, it just wasn't really. I guess I was like, okay, is that it? Like, is there anything else that's going to happen? Like, I've done it. So now it's next. and I guess you could say that's where the race horses kind of came into play. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I read a quote. As a matter of fact, you were talking about that barrel finals championship that you won in Canada. And I guess that was back in 2010. The horse's name was Chico, if I remember correctly, from what I read. Yeah. And you said, I like to do pretty much anything that's dangerous. You use the words crash test dummy. I'll use the word daredevil. Is that a proper way to describe Brittany Vandenberg?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, all through childhood, I was always a little daredevil. I had, you know, I had my horses. I did bull riding, which most people didn't know. I think I maybe rode probably 8 to 10 bulls when I was, you know, a kid. I can't remember the exact ages, but I played football. Wow. I was a star on the football team. I was a running back. I pretty much did everything that my mom kind of had to close her eyes and was like, oh my goodness, is this actually my daughter doing this kind of thing? So, but she got hardened to it and she got used to it, and now she embraces it. But yeah, I was always kind of a little daredevil, but Slowing down now with training, but I still get some crazy ones in there, and of course I still ride all my own horses. So, but yeah, definitely a little daredevil. So,
I'm not sure I've ever had a train. Well, I've had trainers on the show who have played football, but not a female trainer who has played football. I think that is so cool, Brittany, and it just speaks to who you are. You were fearless even as a young kid like that, right?
Oh, God, yeah, and I love the sport of football. I mean, if you're here on a Sunday, watch out. I mean, it's yelling, it's screaming at the TV, it's everything. But, yeah, I played football for a bunch of years, actually. I went to played in Pittsburgh at the Steelers Stadium in an all-star game, and I won a bunch of MVPs and everything. I was actually really good at it. Obviously, I was a girl, and I was a little too small, so I couldn't really take it any further. But I made the most of it when I did, and I had a lot of fun. So I'm definitely an advocate of football for all kids. I mean, it's good for girls, too. It kind of keeps you away from the boys for a while. So.
Yeah, I have to tell you, you said the magic word for me and for my producer who's back in our studio. We are both diehard Steelers fans. He's actually from Pittsburgh, and
so when you mentioned playing,
yeah, okay, let's move on to a new subject, but we don't have to dwell on that. I was going to ask you about playing in the Steelers Stadium.
Oh, it was unbelievable! Unbelievable! My dad is a diehard Steelers fan. So he's like, I thought my son, you know, might be in the football things, but I never thought my daughter would bring me to the Pittsburgh Steelers stadium. But yeah, we went there for an all-star game, and we had to play another team there. And I don't think we won. I think we lost. I mean, we're a small town Canadian, you know, football team playing a big American team. I don't think I'd ever seen guys that big in my life. So, but it was a lot of fun anyways, but. Definitely amazing being in that stadium and standing where some of the greats have stood. I mean, Terry Bradshaw and you know, all those guys, Ben. So it was really, really, really amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. Talking with Brittany Vandenberg, former high school football star, former barrel racing champion, and former bull rider, former jockey, now training horse. Brittany, where do we – I mean, there are so many layers to this story of yours, which I find fascinating. When you compare riding barrel horses, and we'll leave the bulls out of this for now, but compare riding barrel horses to what you did as a jockey, how do you compare the two disciplines? Can they be compared?
Okay, well, this was the hardest thing I had to go through, because it was everything that I learned in barrel racing. It's basically take it, throw it out the window, and it's the exact opposite for racehorses. Barrel racing is very light-handed. A lot of leg movements, a lot of suppling with the horses through the belly, through the body. And basically, I mean, you just take all that and throw it all out. I mean, in racehorses, you got to throw a tight cross. Your legs are up high. You don't have use to your legs. So that was such a challenge for me, because I used to get on these horses and be like, oh, okay. I mean, I don't pull back to whoa them, and I don't, you know, I got to actually pull in their mouth and they're not going to stop. So things like that were very different for me to try to learn. And I mean, galloping for me was extremely tough, but I didn't really have a good, I guess you could say a good base for it. I kind of just jumped into horse racing, and I don't know if we're going to get into that, but anyway, it was a lot different. It was a lot different than riding the barrel horses. The only things that I could take out of barrel racing and put into racing was the horse itself. So just learning to read a horse itself definitely helped me a lot when it came to racing. Just the eye movements, the head movements, the demeanor, things in that nature helped me out a lot in racing, where a lot of people, I guess, I wouldn't say wouldn't have had that, but didn't have as much experience with that as what I did at that point. So that did help me a lot.
How did you get started in racing?
Well, after we talked about the barrel racing thing, so after that had happened, I had talked to my parents and I said, look, I did this and I'm kind of, I don't know if I want to keep doing the barrel racing thing. I said, I'm at a point where, like, okay, I've done it. I don't know how many times I can keep doing it and keeping it special. So I said, you know what? I love to go fast. I love to do stuff like that. And, you know, I had never watched horse racing on. I mean, when the Kentucky Derby came on, I'd watched it, but I had never watched horse racing. I couldn't name you a single jockey. I mean, I didn't. Just in Canada, where I was from, I was 4 hours from Woodbine, so, you know, I didn't have a lot of, I guess, Woodbine wasn't a big thing where I was at. It was 4 hours away. I mean, you'd have to drive all the way there to get there. So, I mean, it just wasn't a huge aspect of my life. But I said, I like to go fast, and I like to win. So I said, you know, I talked to my dad, and I said, I'm looking at all these barrel horses, and a lot of them are past race horses. I said, you know what? So let's try to get, you know, a two-year-old or a three-year-old and just kind of dip into this a little bit, you know, and kind of see where we're at. So my dad's like, okay, you know, I'm with you. If you want to try it, you know, whatever you want to try, we'll do. And I said, well, look, there's a sale coming up. I don't know if you know the Oklahoma Heritage Place sale, and it's for quarter horses, sure. Not thoroughbreds. But you know, we said if the horse doesn't work out as a racehorse, we'll turn it into a barrel horse and we'll sell it. So anyway, we flew in Oklahoma. We picked out a horse. We both looked at this horse, and I told my dad, I said, hey, this is the one. Let's pick this one. It's a nice, cheap horse. I mean, we didn't have a pile of money to spend on horses. So I think we bought her for like $2,300. I mean, something ridiculously cheap. And we brought her back home, and we knew she was a two-year-old. She needed to grow a little bit. And we just started looking through and this is going to sound old-timey, but we were looking through the yellow pages of the phone book to try and find sure. a racehorse trainer. I can't even believe I'm saying that now, but we were trying to find a racehorse trainer. We said, who does this? So we were looking all over for it. We asked a couple people in barrel racing, and they referred me to this guy in Michigan. His name was Richard Rotelli. We gave him a call, and he said, yeah, sure. He says, you know, I've never really had anyone just call me out of the clear blue and say, I have a racehorse. I've never watched racing, and will you take it on for me? But he said, that's fine. You know, it had really good breeding and everything. He says, I'll take it on. Well, what ended up happening was she ended up being really bad over there. And he said, you know what? He says, she's getting really bad, and they were kind of getting ready to quit her. And they said, does your daughter, you know, if she wants to come and ride her, you know, if she wanted to just give it a try or see if she could work with it, you know, would she want to come over and help? And I was like, yeah, sure. And my mom said, you know, you're small, Brittany. You could be the jockey of this horse. I mean, this is how green we were. We're just like, you know, you could ride this horse in a race. So anyway, I went over there. I had no galloping experience, nothing. Never seen a saddle, like a racing saddle, never seen nothing, an exercise saddle. And they threw me up on her, and I started working with her, and you know, we became really close, me and this horse. And I said, look, I really want to ride this horse in a race. And he told me, he says, well, you have to get your license, and he walked me through the whole process of how to do it. And they had starting gates at their farm. So he said, well, you know, come out of the starting gates one time on her and see how you feel. And like I said, I really didn't have much guidance. They kind of showed me what to do and where to put my hands and everything. And then they said, okay, the bell's going to ring and you're going to come out of the gate. So, you know, hold on. Here's where you hold on. So I remember the first time I did it, I lost my stirrup, but I quickly got it and I was good. Well, I think I had maybe one more time to practice it. And then they said, well, look, there's a race for your horse in Michigan coming up. Do you want to go down there in front of this guy we know and see if you can get your license, break out of the gate with some other guy and get your license, and then you can ride her? So anyway, long story short, I ended up getting my license. I broke out of the gate, and I went into my first race on my own horse, which was very special for me. And, I mean, I was extremely nervous. I had never, you know, done anything like this. I was, like, you know, completely green. I had no idea how the races were ran or anything. And they threw me on this horse, and we were in the one hole, and we ran a 90 speed figure, which is a really high speed index for a quarter horse, and we won our first race. And wow. I remember not knowing if I won or not, and I didn't know where to go even if I did win. So when I pulled up, I turned around, and I went back to the barn. I didn't know where to go. I didn't go back to the winner's circle. I had no idea. I said, well, is this the way back to the barn? And the outrider's like, no, dear, you got to go to the wind circle. You won. The horse goes back here. So anyway, I was crying. It was unbelievable. And that's kind of what got me hooked into horse racing. So,
yeah, I can see why you would be yeah, I can see why you'd be completely hooked after an experience like that. And it's such a great story. I mean, not even knowing where the winner's circle is. And now I mentioned at the top of the show that lofty win percentage that you have and all the trips you've made to the winner's circle, not just as a jockey, but now as a trainer. And to think of where it all started, Brittany, and to see where it is today is pretty special.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah, it really is. It's unbelievable. We have a good team that works with us now, and we set goals for ourselves all the time and stuff like that, and we just keep looking at it and going, okay, you know, we set the bar here for 1 year, and we set the bar here for another year. My one owner that I have is big on numbers. He's an excellent guy, great human being, probably the best thing that could have ever happened to our team, and he's a goal setter, so he keeps looking at things and setting goals, and he's like, my God, this is unbelievable. We keep breaking these goals in 6 months to a year, and we keep, you know, adding more on, and I guess that's why we haven't really looked back. We just keep setting goals, and you know, our long-term goals are to get much bigger, you know, bigger, better horses, but for now, it's grown a lot faster than we could have ever expected, so...
Yeah, talking with Brittany Vandenberg here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you can hear, her story is incredible, and no doubt there are many chapters still yet to be written. We're about a minute and a half or so away from the bottom of the hour commercial break, Brittany, but I just want to bring this up. I think that if you ever decide that horse racing isn't for you and you decide to do something else, I'm going to recommend that you go into a sales position because of the fact that you had to convince your mom to keep letting you get on horses. You had to convince her to let you play high school football against the boys. You had to convince your dad to fly all the way to Oklahoma to buy a racehorse for you. And that's what got things started. You are one hell of a salesperson. I don't know how you did it, but that's incredible.
I had to learn the gift to gab when I was young, that's for sure.
pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty persuasive, I guess you could say.
Before we wrap things up, just real quick, the bull riding, when you were riding the bulls, you said you rode, what, 6 or 7 or 8 bulls, I guess, in your time?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. I rode at least a handful, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I guess just speaks to the fearless nature of who you are at heart, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was just another experience. It was an event in the rodeo that I had yet to try. So I said, you know what, let's give it a whirl. And a couple of my friends were doing it in the rodeo. It was a lot of fun. I mean, it wasn't something that was going to stick for me. It was just something that was like, hey, would you get on this bull? And I was like, oh, of course I would.
Yeah, why not? Did you stay on the whole time?
Yeah, so, but anyway, it was a lot of fun. All those memories are a lot of fun. I mean, if I had kids now, I don't know if I'd be as willing to let them do what I did, but at that time, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, good stuff. Brittany Vandenberg here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We are going to get to that commercial break here at the bottom of the hour. When I come back, we'll continue to talk more about her journey. We'll talk about her riding career. We'll talk about the success she's had as a trainer and some of the top moments that stand out to her. This is Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The heat is on in February at Fasig Tipton. Fasig Tipton is still accepting entries for the 2021 Fasig Tipton Kentucky Winter Mix Sale, the last breeding stock sale of the season. In 2020, the sale produced scorching results with a $575,000 sale-topping broodmare prospect, a $310,000 in-foal broodmare, and a $265,000 short yearling. Enter now for the Fasig Tipton Kentucky Winter Mix Sale to be held February 8th and 9th in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you be? Attention horsemen, nominations for this year's Triple Crown open on January 11th. The first closing is Saturday, January 23rd, and a payment of $600 must accompany that nomination. The fastest and easiest way to nominate your horse to this year's Triple Crown is online with a credit card by visiting thetriplecrown.com, or you can call Kelly Danner at Churchill Downs at 502-639-3825. The second closing is March 29th, but it will cost you $6,000 on that date. So it's best to get your nominations in early at thetriplecrown.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Running on from the backfield as they turn to the top of the stretches. Yeah, I know. Aiming at PH Factory, set some fast fractions. We'll see if those do him in as he turns on down. Three to the good. Triple Delight is on the move. And here comes Miracle Mountain from the back of the pack. The Chicago Invader has dead aim on the pace hitter. And it's Miracle Mountain who's forging to the front. And Miracle Mountain is drawn away with each and every stride. Miracle Mountain is now a 7-time winner and wins by just about 4.5 in the end. Pace setting PH Factor did hang on for second in 137-1.
Big win by Miracle Mountain at Turfway Park. And that was for my special guest, Brittany Vandenberg, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. That is her lone win so far in 2021, but it's also her only starter. So she's undefeated this year, and she comes into 2021 off of a couple of banner years to kick off her training career. We're going to talk more about that. We'll talk more about her riding career as she transitioned from being a jockey into training horses. We'll tell you all about it in the second half of the program here. But want to remind you, if you missed any portion of this show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Brittany, I received an email back in October from a listener who listens to Trainer Talk all the time, and he mentioned that he was from Michigan, and he said, listen, Hazel Park, which was in Michigan, closed abruptly a few years ago, and one of the local favorite jockeys was Brittany Vandenberg, and he said, I would love to hear her story at some point on Trainer Talk. So for that listener, this show dedicated to him, and I know so many people are enjoying hearing your story, but Hazel Park was a special place too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Hazel Park guys, if you're listening, it's nice to hear from you again. I haven't talked to them in so long. They're definitely like a big family over there. It was a lot of fun. So I'm glad somebody wrote in and said that they still remembered me and were watching me from over there. That means a lot.
So you told the story in the first half of the program about riding in your first quarter horse race with a horse that you and your dad went and picked out and that you owned, and it was so special. You didn't even know how to get back to the winner's circle. You didn't know that's what you were supposed to do after you won that race. Where did the journey go from there?
So after that had happened, obviously we were just totally hooked. I mean, I was hooked. My family was hooked. They were like, this is awesome. We just started, quarter horse racing, got into quarter horse racing with this guy a little bit. I started riding, learning more, trying to learn more about this thing. Because when I was in that first race, I mean, I didn't even know how to uncock my whip. I had no clue. So it was just a big learning experience after that, trying to get into it and everything else. And working with that trainer I had mentioned before, Richard Rotelli. So it just kind of branched out from there where I started riding. We went to Ohio at Thistledown, and I said, I really want to try the thoroughbreds. I really would like a mind game, more in the races other than just, speed. So I can't remember how many starts I had there, but I went on a lady horse called Lady B, which is perfect for my name. So and then after that, I rode a few more, but we didn't want to break the bug. We wanted to wait to go to Woodbine because that's where I was from. So we kind of played a little bit through there. We won some races and did good. And then I put up my tack and I waited for Woodbine. And I went over to Canada and I rode at Woodbine in Fort Erie, won some races over there. And then was just kind of like, just kind of bouncing back and forth from track to track, figuring out kind of where I wanted to go. I didn't really, and not to say I didn't like Woodbine because I love the people there and I think everybody there is great. And I guess I didn't like the city of Toronto as much. So I said, this isn't really the place for me. It wasn't the place I wanted to be. So I guess from there is why I kind of dipped into Chicago. I said, let me try something else that I like. But I kind of known in riding that I was going to transfer over to being a trainer just from the way that I would ride. I mean, I would get on horses and look down more than I looked up. I used to say, oh man, I can fix that and I can fix that and he's doing this and I can do that. But you can't tell the trainer that, So I used to just try to, pick out things of every horse I was racing and then kind of look at the guy and say, you know, maybe if you try this, or maybe if you do, you know, very subtle. But anyway, so yeah, I kind of knew I was going to transfer over into being a trainer, but my riding career lasted. I mean, it was fantastic. And then we moved over to Hazel Park, and the reason why we were there is because it was only 40 minutes from my house across the border. So it was awesome. I could stay at home and train horses from my house, you know, barrel racing horses and stuff. And then I could, you know, jump across the border and get on a few racehorses and have fun doing that. I mean, that place was a lot of fun. So met a lot of nice people there and you know, did neat things. I used to do like a dunk tank and a this and a that, and had, you know, dollar beer Fridays or something. And I mean, it brought out so many people, and the crowd was just crazy at the edge of the rail and cheering your name and holding up signs. And I mean, it was a lot of fun. So I definitely don't regret anything of those days. It was a lot of fun there. So
yeah, more like a county fair type of atmosphere.
Kind of like that. It was fun to just kind of jump in your car, run over there, ride some races, you know, get that feel of crossing the wire first, you know, and then just have a short ride home, you know. And it wasn't like I was moving away, because that was one of my biggest things. I really didn't want to move away from my farm. I was, you know, such a homebody, and I mean, growing up on a farm, you just, you know, everything revolves around that farm. You know, you train horses there, you work there, everything revolves around that. So I guess my biggest obstacles was moving around, but that place was kind of like a little side place from home, and it was a great place to go and meet some people and have some fun. So,
you know, I read an article getting ready for the show, and I believe it was done in 2015 when you were riding at Hazel Park. There was a race that featured three female riders, and you were one of the three female jockeys in that race. And the other ones were a lady by the name of Kelly Spanabel and then Kim Cecil, who was also in there. And I remember Kelly in that article telling the story about all of the different injuries that she had sustained in more than three decades of riding races. And she talked about 31 pins in her knee and plates and screws in her ankles. She said half of her stomach was gone because of a spill that she had earlier in her career. So I guess the decision to get away from riding races and move on to being a trainer from that standpoint, even though you're a daredevil, Brittany, had to be somewhat easy.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's what I said too. I said, you know, when I'm 30, I just turned 30 this past year, but I always said by the time I was going to be 30, I didn't want to keep riding anymore. I kind of counted my lucky stars. I had some spills, but you know, I got very lucky. I didn't break anything all through racing. I guess you could say I learned how to fall through my younger career. so I learned how to, you know, the tuck and roll method, I guess. But I had some seriously scary spills where I ended up in the hospital, but I never broke anything. So I got really lucky in that sense. But I guess, you know, making that change, yeah, you could say that did make it easier. It definitely wasn't the biggest thing in the back of my mind was getting hurt, but it did make the decision a lot easier to turn to training, because, you know, it didn't pose that risk that riding poses, and I could still have the best of racing. I could still ride all my own horses, and I could still do that, but I just take away the racing part, and that way it takes away some of that risk. So yeah, I know she had a ton of injuries. I know a lot of riders that have had a bunch of injuries, so I'm over here knocking on wood, like, thank goodness I haven't been, you know, involved in anything like that. But it definitely had my fair share of spills, that's for sure.
When you finally decided to move on from being a rider and train full-time, and I mentioned your first starter came in, what, June of 2019, I guess it was. When you finally made that decision, was there an aha moment where you said, okay, this is the time, or had it been building up for a while?
Okay, so this was amazing, actually. So I had talked with Chris about this, and I talked with my family, and I talked with a bunch of people, and I had said, look, I really want to start training, but training is so difficult to get into, because you need to have money, because you need to have horses, and you need to be able to buy these horses, and if they break down, or if they, you know, don't work out or don't win, you need to still feed them and take care of them and everything else. So it was a lot of money that needed to go into it. So there was a lot of thoughts about, I guess, how to do this, the right way, how to approach this the right way to be successful, you know, with limited funds, I guess you could say, because I wasn't lighting the world on fire as a rider. So it was just how to do this with limited funds. So, I had gone to watch races. So I had said to Chris, I said, look, I'm going to start training, but I just want to wait till the time is right. And I said, I'm going to go and watch you race. You know, he had a couple races. He rides for a guy, a really great trainer named Scott Becker. He had some horses over there at Fairmount Park Racetrack, yeah. And that's in Illinois. So
and that's Chris Amy, right? Chris
ride.
Amy, your fiance, right?
Yeah,
just so people are
yeah,
aware, because you mentioned that at the top of the show. Chris Amy, your fiance.
Yeah, yeah. So yep. I'm sure a lot of people probably know him. But yeah, he. I was watching him, you know, ride races, and someone had approached me there, and they said, hey, we're looking for a trainer in Chicago, a horse trainer in Chicago, and you know, we got a couple nice horses, and you know, this guy really wants to start investing and everything. They said, where can we find a good trainer? And I said, well, you're looking at one. and I don't have my license or anything. And they said, really? And I said, yeah. I've rode, and they knew me from riding. And I said, I'm looking to take out a trainer's license, and I'm looking to get started. And they said, really? And they said, well, you know, what would you charge and everything? We kind of got into that. And so after we kind of went through that, I said to Chris, I said, oh, my God, you know, these people are serious. I mean, I didn't know them from a hill of beans, so I didn't know how serious they were or anything. But I said, Chris, I got to get my trainer's license, and, like, now. They want to bring me horses, like, now. So I had no study time, no nothing. And I just went into Hawthorne, and I said, I need to take a trainer's test. And they said, okay, well, we'll schedule you. Can you sit down and take the written exam right now? And I said, yeah, sure. And I remember being so nervous. But anyway, I passed it, you know, I guess pretty easily, which was fantastic. But right shortly after that, I mean, they sent me horses. So I was cleaning my own stalls. I was riding, you know, galloping my own horses. I had to go out and buy my own tack and everything. And it was just like, you know, it all just kind of happened. And I'm like, okay, I got to figure out how to write these guys' bills and, you know, how to talk to them. But, you know, so they made it really easy, but it was very difficult. So I was literally in the barn from morning till night with these horses, just, you know, grooming, riding, doing stalls, feeding, you know, twice a day. And I had lived like an hour away from the track, so I couldn't really go back and forth a lot. So, I mean, it was easy in the sense of where it all of a sudden just got put on me, and I was like, wow, I got owners. But it was difficult in the sense of where it was like, okay, now I got, you know, four horses. How do I make this work without employees, without it, you know? So anyway, that's kind of how things got the ball rolling for me as a trainer. So
yeah, it's the epitome of on-the-job training, right?
Yeah.
You had no choice. And there's a saying that says, listen, if you want to be successful, you burn all bridges so you can't look back. And it sounds like you kind of did that. You said, okay, I'm going all in. I'm betting on myself. And this is going to be 100% Brittany Vandenberg's operation. And I'm going to do it my way. And I'm going to learn on the fly. And obviously the results speak for themselves. It's worked.
No, thanks, Mike. Yeah, that's basically what I did. I said, I got enough knowledge that I'm not taking people in and just saying, hey, I know how to train your horse. You know, I've been around horses, you know, long enough to know I really in my head thought, okay, and in my heart, I can make these horses better than where they're at. But I just didn't have all the it's the small things, the paperwork, the this, the that. So that all came on the fly, and it was the simplest little things, like how to put up a hay net and how to do little things that I had never done before. I mean, you put me on a horse and I know what to do and I know what to point it out. But the little things, I was like, okay, you know, how do I do this little stuff? And I remember having to ask these stupid questions, and I'm sure people were like, are you sure that you're, you know, that you're a horse trainer? And I'm like, yeah, you know, put me on the horse and I'll do it, but put me on the ground and I'm kind of like, okay, where's this? Where's that? So, but anyway, I learned on the fly, and I can say it was very successful, and I'm very happy that our team kind of stick with me through it. So,
what are some of the things that you think you still need to learn and get better with, Brittany?
Oh, my God, so much. Well, the different types of horses. Like I said, I'm kind of good at reading horses, but horses that are the shape of horses that might be prone to more injuries, things like that. Picking better races for horses, I'm sure I can improve on that. Knowing if someone's dropping a horse because they need to get a win, or if the horse is, you know, possibly on its, you know, last few races, you know, getting ready to retire, things like that. Just knowing the inside of the game, you know, I think just knowing the inside of racing a little bit better. I mean, in 1 year, I've grown so much to where I kind of want my base to be at. And I guess that base just keeps growing. And now we started with a very cheap base of horses because, like I said, we didn't have much money. And I talked to my owner about it, and he said, look, whatever you make in the racing goes back into the racing. Whatever you lose in the racing, I'm not putting back into racing. So that was kind of like, okay, I better make this work. So so we started with a small price point for horses, and I think that was a good idea, because then I got to work with a kind of cheaper point of horses and take less risk on that. But now I'm getting more comfortable. I'm getting more used to dealing with situations that maybe I wouldn't have been comfortable with in the past, with certain horses and certain, you know, problematic horses. And I'm getting much better with that. So I'm just hoping to keep continuing to grow in those areas and just become an overall a better race-minded person and a better horseman is, I guess, what I strive for every day. So. And the horses teach me to do that. You know, they're great at that. They throw me a new curveball every day.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, you never stop learning, right? And no matter what job you're in, what career,
go ahead.
You never stop learning.
No, this is a job where, you know, I always said, well, you know, you shouldn't bring your work back home with you. But this is a job where I swear my work comes back with me 24 hours a day. There is not a time, you know, where I can think of where my mind is completely free and clear of you know, maybe a horse I had that didn't go so well today or something, you know, and it just like throws me off. Okay, why would that horse do that? Or, you know, what could be off in his blood, or what could be, you know, upsetting him today or whatever. And, you know, I'll think of that throughout the day, you know, and things like that. So I take my work home, but I enjoy it. I love it. It's what keeps me going. I love figuring things out. And I think that's what's helped us a lot is the point of where we're not hard headed. We're not stubborn. I'm not sitting there thinking, okay, this is why this happens. And I know why. I'm never saying I know. There's so many possibilities of what could be wrong and what can help you in this game. And you just really got to keep an open mind to everything and just try to figure things out the best you can. And yeah, so like I said, you know, work comes home with me every day. The horses come home with me every day, basically, in a sense. And I think about it all the time. And that's where I learn to grow. I just keep learning from each horse. So they definitely teach me something new every day.
If you had the chance, Brittany, to spend a day with one trainer, past or present, and you could ask them anything you wanted to ask them about training horses or life or their philosophy, whatever it might be, who's the one trainer you would love to spend the day with?
I think that one's easy for me because I worked for him for a short period of time, Todd Fletcher. I really liked the way that he did things. At his operation, he was so classy about what he did. He was so thorough about each horse. There was not a horse that he didn't look over with a fine tooth comb every day. He was a really special horseman, and he really paid close attention to detail. And yet, just a great guy, an overall great guy. And I think that's important that you don't lose that. And he was fantastic when I met him and when I had the pleasure of dealing with him. And if I had the chance to sit down and really pick his brain, he would be the one that I would do so. And I think he could give me a lot of information on, you know, where to set your sights, how to not grow maybe too fast, or how to kind of manage everything that's getting thrown at you. And I think he was someone who had to do that. Starting with a small stable and growing, and I think I could pick his brain a lot in those points. So it would definitely be him. I have a lot of respect for him.
What do you think makes a guy like Todd Pletcher so good?
His ability to stay cool through everything is what I'm kind of getting from him. He seems like a very calm, cool guy, very level-headed. Things get thrown at him, and he deals with it. And a lot of people can't handle the pressure, and a lot of people can't handle think about it. He's got people giving him millions and millions of dollars worth of horses, and, I mean, that's all on him if that horse goes good and bad. And you got to be able to take that and withstand that. And I think that he's so knowledgeable with the horse, and he's so good at dealing with people. And I think that it's just kind of snowballed together, and it's just kind of made him this fantastic guy. I mean, I've seen owners talk to him and everything, and he's very open and very honest. And I think that goes a long way, being honest with your partners and, like I said, keeping an open mind to everything in the barn and trying different things and going over each horse and trying to help that. I mean, I think his operations, we started so early. We started at like 4 a.m. I mean, he was there going over every horse in a line. And that's what
I've
do now because I kind of saw him do that. I go over every horse every day. And it makes a big difference. It really does. Giving attention to everybody. And he's got a heck of a lot more horses than I do. but if he can do it and he can take, you know, the attention to each and every horse, I sure as heck can do it with the amount of horses I have now. So that's what I got out of him. And I really respect him, and I really like the way he runs things. And I'm sure he's going to go down in the Hall of Fame as one of the best horse trainers around. So I hope that he does. I wish him nothing but the best.
Yeah, I've seen the operation. I've seen it firsthand and seen him walk down and go through every horse. I've seen the exercise riders come out from across the shed row almost in a line as if they're coming to the paddock before a race. And
right.
I've seen him give a leg up to those guys. And his operation is just so clockwork, much like his mentor Dwayne Lucas. He learned from one of the greatest of all time, and now
he
of course is, as you said, probably going to go down as one of the greatest of all time. When you talk to him, Brittany, don't be afraid to throw that statistic out that I gave you. Nearly 29% of your horses have won so far. His win rate's only 22.8, so you can throw that at him.
he
might come back with multiple Kentucky Derbies and Breeders' Cups, and don't worry about any of that.
Don't worry about that. I got the percentage.
Yeah, great start to her career for Brittany Vandenberg, who is my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. 47 of her first 163 starters have found their way to the winner's circle. No doubt there will be many more to come. As you look at your future, Brittany, and you went through some of the different goal-setting things that you work with your team on and how all that comes together. But you talked about maybe not growing too fast. How many horses do you have now? How many would you like to have in an ideal world?
Okay, so towards the end of the year, me and my owner kind of talked with each other, and we had a few horses. We were up to close to 20 horses at one point, but with the way that COVID hit and everything, we said we just don't want to spend another January with all these horses, so we kind of picked and choose which ones we kind of thought we could spare with and get them claimed in the right spots, and we did. So now we're down to about 10 horses, and I mean, we're looking to get more, but we downsized for January. We just thought let's just see where things play out, and this is where, like I said, that my one owner, he's a real numbers guy. He really looks at things and says, okay, this is what makes sense, this is what doesn't make sense numbers wise. So we did downsize for January, but you know, we are looking to claim and get more horses and, you know, and buy and all kinds of stuff. But we decided to take a little turn, like I said, for January, get down. I'm looking, when I say not grow too fast, is where that whole learning curve comes in that I talked to you about. And I don't want to grow faster than I'm learning, I guess I could put that in words. I don't want to be growing too fast to where I got all this on my plate and I cannot give each and every horse 110%. I want every horse in the barn to get 110%. No matter what the price tag of that animal, we love all of our horses. Every horse gets treated the same. And I feel like if we start growing too fast, you know, I don't want any of that to lack. So the horse number that I've set out is 20. That's where I kind of want to be at. I think that that's a great number. That gives me time to ride every one of those horses, because I still like to ride all my horses in the morning. That gives me time to ride each horse, to feel them out, to pay attention to all those horses. A big part of this game is getting good grooms and good help. So, all of our grooms and everything, they go through like a process with me that we kind of figure out, you know, do we like this guy? Is he good for our team? We really make it a big team effort. And to find people to add to that team in such a hurry, it just doesn't work. So I've got enough people and enough guys and enough help and enough knowledge, I feel, that I could run a 20-horse barn very comfortably and still stay in the green with all of our numbers. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. So when I say don't grow too fast, I mean I got a number in my head that I know that, you know, I can work with.
Well, we're down to about the final 2 minutes of this edition of Trainer Talk. It has really flown by, and Brittany Vandenberg is my special guest. Brittany, your fiancé, Chris Amey, has ridden more than 4,100 winners in his career. He is a highly accomplished jockey, multiple greatest stakes victories to his credit. You give him a leg up, and let's say he doesn't give your horse the best of rides. Is the wedding off?
No. Oh, boy.
How does that dynamic work?
Okay, well, I'll tell you how. Okay, so when it first started happening, it was like, okay, how do I tell this guy what to do? I mean, I can't tell him what to do. But we kind of, you know, Chris is someone I feel so comfortable with him when I leg him up. He knows so much. He's been around for so long. And, you know, the fact that he's kind of here with me and he kind of sees how the horses go and everything, we kind of have a regiment. I put my full trust into him. I don't talk to him at all about the race, because I know if I do, I'll screw up his train of thought. So what we do is we go over replays, we go over races. He goes over replays like crazy for every horse, not just mine, but he goes over replays like crazy for every horse. And I trust whatever decisions he makes out there. As a rider, I know things happen in a split second, so I'm the last person to want to blame riders. I'll take the blame on myself. If he thinks that he maybe made a wrong decision in that time, he'll tell me, and I'll say, okay, that's fine. I mean, it's not to say who wouldn't do that. I mean, as a rider, I've made the wrong decision several times. I mean, like I said, when the gates open, everything happens so fast. It's easy to watch on camera. So we kind of have it down pat. I mean, he goes out there, I put 100% trust in him, and I kind of do that with most of the riders. You'll never hear me give a rider instructions. From riding, I just know how things happen, and I expect my riders to go over replays and to know how the horse runs, and I give them enough credit that I know that they've done their homework, and I let them do their job. That's why they're the professional. So I let them do their job. I just make sure I bring the horse over to the paddock as ready as I possibly can, ready to win. That's my biggest thing. We are very competitive. We come over there, when we saddle a horse, we know we're ready to win. And if we don't, we congratulate the heck out of the person that does. But we come over to fire, and the riders always know when they get a leg up, their horse is ready. So that's
pretty much
all I can say on that.
There you have it, Brittany Vandenberg, ladies and gentlemen. Brittany, listen, really appreciate the visit. We're just about out of time. We'll encourage people to go and follow your operation, and really appreciate you taking time to tell your story.